This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome KT Tunstall.
Her face is a map of the world, is a map of the world. You can see she's a beautiful girl, she's a beautiful girl. And everything around it is a silver pool of light. The people who surround it bring the benefit of it, it makes you count. Should you captivate it in a pie? Suddenly I see, this is who I wanna be. Suddenly I see, why the hell means so much to me? This is who I wanna be. Suddenly I see, why the hell means so much to me? She's a beautiful girl, she's a beautiful girl. Fills up every corner like she's born in black and white. Makes you feel old and you're trying to remember what you heard. She likes to leave you hanging on.
Strong tower, yeah. Power to be, the power to give, the power to see, yeah, yeah. Got the power to be, the power to give, the power to see, yeah, yeah. Oh. Suddenly I see.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking today with KT Tunstall. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
We are speaking to KT at an undisclosed location in Bozeman, Montana. And as we are recording this in mid-March of 2018, KT is here as part of the Hatch Festival. And I want to just mention that just to give a shout out to them for bringing you here so we could get a chance to talk shop with you. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be familiar with KT's work, a Grammy-nominated songwriter, singer, and live looping artist as well, and film composer, if I'm not mistaken. You're getting into some film work too, is that right?
Yeah, I was very honored to be accepted onto the Sundance Film Composers Lab. They do labs for directors, for actors. Guillermo del Toro, Quentin Tarantino came through their director's lab, so they're really very kind of, you know, impactful labs held in high esteem in the industry, and I managed to become one of six fellows on the Composers Lab, I think 3 years ago now, which was, I mean, the steepest learning curve of my adult life. It was extraordinary, and yeah, definitely a very different job from making records. You're working for someone else for a start. Yeah. But you're, I mean, for me, if I go and see a movie, the best score is one that I haven't even noticed. I'm just engrossed in the film. So it's a whole different, you know, whereas with an album, you're trying to get people's attention all the time. So it's definitely a different thing.
As I said before, we started the interview, I've been practicing the pronunciation of Edinburgh, and and that is, of course, where you were born. And I wanted to start there, maybe, and just kind of take us to Edinburgh. I've never been there. I've been to the north of England, but I've never been to Edinburgh. So maybe just kind of take our listeners there if they've not been there. Sights, sounds, tastes, the whole thing, weather.
So Edinburgh, I mean, I've traveled a lot all over the world, and I think that Edinburgh is just amazing in that you step out of... Take the train, first of all. If you're traveling from London, take the train up, because you see a fantastic amount of Great Britain on that train journey up the coast, up the East Coast. And you step out of the train station and it's just Harry Potter land. You just walk out and it looks incredible. It's a beautiful postcard of a place. And you've got this amazing old, I don't know what it is, 16th century, 15th century castle sitting on a volcanic plug, which is basically like a mini mountain in the middle of the city. And then sort of if you look across the city, there's another volcanic kind of rock pillar, and that's called Arthur's Seat. And you can walk up that and get the most amazing view of the city and the surrounding countryside. So, I mean, I like cities that have got those really kind of quite overwhelming natural landmarks in them, river, lake, mountain, whatever. I think it really helps keep a kind of well-being, a perspective of well-being within a city, having that. Edinburgh is cold. Wrap up. You're very lucky if you're going to be able to wear a t-shirt at any time of the year. The wind whistles through these corridors of high buildings, and but there's so much to do and see, and you can do all of it by foot. It's just, it's a walking city. So wear your walking shoes. Fantastic whiskey, brilliant restaurants. So to get to know the rest of Scotland, you need to do a bit of travelling, but it's a great start.
Feeling lost.
KT, I wanted to talk about how music started to become a part of your life. And if I'm not mistaken, in doing a little bit of research, your household growing up was not necessarily one that was filled with a lot of music. Am I correct in that? I know your dad was in the science field and that kind of set some courses for you, but how did music start to become a part of your life? And one thing I do remember reading or hearing in an interview was that you had a feel pretty early on that you wanted to be a performer and a musician.
So there was no music in our house, basically. We had a tape player, and my dad had a couple of classical music tapes, so he would listen to Mozart and Beethoven. He had a Tom Lehrer tape, who was a satirical mathematician, doctor of mathematics from Harvard, who would sort of do these weird sort of, what are they called? Is it Rogerson? Hammerstein sort of style satire. So he did that amazing song, The Table of Elements, if anyone remembers that. And amazing, really, really brilliant lyricist and writer, but not exactly kind of, you know, listening to the Beatles growing up. He also had one Billie Holiday tape, which I remember listening to a little bit. But that was it. And it was not a common occurrence having music on in the house. And then my little brother was born, and he was born deaf. And so that kind of compounded not having extra background noise for him. He would wear hearing aids, and it was just really distracting for him if there was noise. But I mean, at the age of three, I was gravitating towards musical instruments at kindergarten. And when I first started, we call it primary school, but I guess it's grade school, I was 4 years old, and we had a music teacher, and she played piano, and I just was completely obsessed with this huge thing that she was making noise from. So I managed to persuade my parents to get me a secondhand piano and started lessons, and I started off as this sort of child prodigy, getting almost perfect results, and it was a very steady decline for the next 12 years of getting less and less good results in exams. I just wasn't very interested in doing the exams. I just wanted to play. And then that led me to 15 years old, where I picked up the guitar for the first time. And that immediately made sense.
And from that, did songwriting come?
I'd started creative writing much earlier. I was definitely excelling in English at school and at storytelling and writing. And I loved Sesame Street, and I loved Dr. Seuss, and I loved Roald Dahl particularly, and reading his books, and I loved the perfection of that rhyming. So I'd started writing little poems and things like that, but I think it was, I think I started to write songs on piano, but really not in earnest. It was just sort of playing around. And then as soon as I got the guitar, it was kind of, everything clicked.
Change of coming. Whoa, tired of January.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Katie Tunstall. We're speaking to you from Bozeman, recording this in Bozeman, Montana, in mid-March in 2018. I just wanted to touch on another thing in regards to songwriting. I know that you're, in fact, you mentioned Quentin Tarantino. I know you're a Tarantino fan. And one of the interviews that I listened to before getting a chance to speak with you directly was that you really appreciated his kind of juxtaposition of darkness and light, mm-hmm. humor and drama. And I wondered how you bring that to your music. I can think of a couple examples, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, it's I haven't kind of sit down and studied which songs of mine actually do this, but I'm aware that I do it quite often, where I will use the trick of juxtaposing melody and chord progression against an opposing theme in the lyrics. So I'm going to be playing you something that sounds like a really nice, happy song, and I'm going to be saying something evil. No, it's usually just to try. I mean, I have come to understand that sad music and negative music and depressing music is easier to write than happy music. It's just a fact that when you're happy, when you're depressed, you're like, oh my God, where's my guitar? I need to write a song. And when you're happy, you're outside doing what you like doing, or you're with someone you like doing things with. So it's not a natural, there isn't this kind of natural compulsion to diarize your happiness in the same way as there is to do so with your sadness or your difficulty. But I do seem to have this knack for writing upbeat, quite uplifting music. And so it's always been quite enjoyable for me to kind of play with that relationship.
I'm thinking of some of your videos of Invisible Empire, and the images are knights in shining armor, and you're one of the knights riding your horse across the beach, and this sword fight, and the song is very gentle.
It's a gentle song, and it's me riding a horse in armor with a sword. And it's really, I think, the overarching realization, I suppose, that I've had as a musician is that on that first record, it was so hugely successful. And there was definitely some vulnerability on that first album, but it was quite a spunky record. It was, it was lots of energy, and there was a lots of celebratory rhythm in that record. And I think that when that happened, it just freaked me out a bit, and I became quite hardened in that I didn't really want to show myself in the same way. You feel quite vulnerable. When suddenly you're making your second record and 5 million people are looking at you, waiting to see what you're going to do. And I just became quite an... I just kind of put myself into more of an observer role, which is not as emotionally connecting as a writer. You can write about other things all day, but really what people want to hear is their own experience expressed through someone else. And so really that song was great in kind of understanding that if you can find vulnerability and strength in equal measure in your songs and in your honesty as a performer, then it's, I think, probably the most powerful place.
I thought the candle was gonna go out, the wind was blowing and the door was open, but the candle never went out, never went out. Where found its way to the shore, thought it was a ripple and nothing more, but the where found its way all the way to the shore. Oh, I wanna burn this house, I know, I wanna jump into the fire. Oh, I've gotta tear them down, the pinnacles of my invisible empire. All the gamble never works twice, all the distractions at the table and waiting dice, but the thrill of it feels so nice. You do it all again. But I look to the chips I'd lose. I'm standing on a platform with my neck in the noose, and I know it's not my time. It's not my time. Oh, gotta burn this house. I know I wanna jump into the fire. Oh, I've gotta tear them down, the pinnacles of my invisible empire. And if I do all the things I do, while I tell myself that I'm staying true, you know I'll never stop, you know I'll never stop, you know I'll never think of.
KT, I mentioned that I wanted to just briefly talk about the concept of looping. And, yeah. You know, we, again, before we started the interview, we were kind of sharing notes on, you know, the techniques and all that kind of stuff. But talk about that decision to make that a big part of how you write music, I would assume, and particularly how you perform it, because it's very much a presence in your live performance.
It came entirely from boredom. I was bored. I'd been playing with a guitar as a girl with guitar in inverted commas for 10 years. So this was sort of around when I was like 27, 28. I got my record deal when I was 29. I was a late bloomer. But of course it happened overnight. And it came to the point where I then had to go out and promote the album. And I just could not face doing that as a girl with a guitar when I'd made this really raw, rhythmic record. And I just couldn't really deliver that on my just with a guitar. And I was actually the guest vocalist in a Jewish hip hop band called Oy Vavoy. And they were putting out a record at the time, and I was singing with them. They were on the same label as me, and I just jumped in as a guest vocalist. And their sound guy, Moshik, who I owe a lot to, had a headrush, an Akai headrush pedal in his bag at a rehearsal. And we finished rehearsal one day, and I was telling him, I don't know what to do, and I want to make more noise, and I can't afford a band. And he said, try this thing. It's a loop pedal. Just see what you think. And I was playing with it, but my eureka moment was playing around with this loop pedal. I needed a beat. And so I thought to myself, surely if I just smack my guitar really hard with my fist, it's going to sound like a drum. And while I'm playing, I can send my guitar to the loop box as well as sending it out front. And then I did the same with the vocal. So I've got I'm like Prince. I've got like a desk at my feet that I'm mixing. I'm not like Prince. I wish I was like Prince. And now in my full show, I've probably got six instruments going into this one loop pedal. I've got like a drum machine, a little keyboard, a hand sampler, the microphone, the guitar, and it's brilliant. It's just really, every time I get proficient, I get bored, so I add something.
So I'm gonna let her do all the talking. Came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. I felt a little fear upon my back, said don't.
want for. Ooh. But I cut some cord and shouldn't have done it. Won't forgive me after all these years. So I sent it to a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a church. But I won't come back cause it's all so happy now. I got a whole world to say.
Katie, we've been talking about songwriting and looping and deep musical things. What are you doing for fun these days? What's when you're not doing music? I know you like to ride horses because I've seen you do it on on video. But what else for fun?
Skiing in Montana, Big Sky. Yeah, I'm a very keen skier. So this winter's been great for bartering gigs for ski time, which has been excellent. I love movies. That's somewhere that you will always find me on a night off, is in a movie theater. And I just find movies very inspiring. I really get lost and. I always offend people because I completely forget who I go to the movies with because I just get so into what I'm watching. I'm just in a very creative phase at the moment, so I'm working on a musical. It's the first time I've kind of gone into musical theatre. I did do a couple of songs actually for a great show in Berlin called The One Grand Show, and that was my foray into musical theatre, but I've now sort of signed on to a project proper. Constantly working on little short films and film scores and hatching plans all over the place, to be honest. So I have a new motto, which is make hay while the brain shines. And that's what I'm following as a life mantra.
KTTunstall.com is the name of the website. I'm going to spell that out for listeners. KT Tunstall is spelled T-U-N-S-T-A-L-L. KTTunstall.com. That's where you can find out more about Katie's work and her music and everything Katie Tunstall. Thank you so much for making time to speak with us here on Musician Spotlight and Talk Shop with us, and hope we get a chance to talk again down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Katie Tunstall. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook as well as on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the Hatch Festival and Music Villa in Bozeman for help with this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.